I'm speaking today with Joseph Carlos Madden, who is running for House District 137, the seat that is currently Scott Hochberg's, but is going to be open when he retires. Joe, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this seat?
Well, you know, first of all, losing Representative Hochberg from the House is a huge brain drain to that body, and it's going to hurt, you know, coming back next session, particularly when we have a lot of problems in public education and not having his skill set there. But I'm running because I've worked in the legislature for the past 9 years. I started as an unpaid intern and worked my way up to executive director of the Legislative Study Group and as chief of staff for Representative Garnet Coleman. But in my time in the legislature, I've realized that there's a big disconnect going on between the policies that get passed in Austin and what's actually happening here on the ground. You know, when I was 16, I started working as an electrician, digging ditches. And I worked my way through college. That's how I kind of helped pay my tuition bills. I'd go home on the weekends and spring break and summer vacations and work construction. And, you know, talking with people there on the ground and then going back up to Austin and seeing the bills that they were focusing their time on, it just didn't make sense to me. So I'm decided it's time to take the next step and try and see if I can move forward, you know, take my community values, take the experience I've got and the skill set I've developed over the last few years and put it to work for the people of Houston. So
tell me a little bit about the life of the legislative staff. What sorts of things did you do as chief of staff and presumably before that doing other staff work?
I've bounced around a lot. You know, I've worked as an unpaid intern, like I said. I've worked before for the Health and Human Services Commission on the policy side. I've worked for the House Democratic Campaign Committee on the campaign side. Most recently, the last 5 years with the Legislative Study Group, what we do is during the legislative session, we analyze every single bill that goes before the House on the general or major state calendar. That's over 1,000 bills every session. And we have to take a look at every single one of these bills, decide if, you know, is this a good bill, a bad bill? Is there a way to improve it? Is there a way to stop it? And make a recommendation to legislators on the floor about whether or not it's favorable or unfavorable. And most importantly, give them the information they need in order to make an informed decision for their constituents. It's not easy. It's a lot of long hours. I tend to have a pillow hiding in the closet for naps. We've spent a lot of nights at the Capitol poring over those bills. It's not necessarily a glamorous lifestyle. You move a lot between apartments during session. During session, I'm in Austin. And then during the interim, I'm back home in Houston. And you're just kind of moving around, bouncing around, and pouring through a lot of very dense material. But it's something that can be very rewarding, particularly when you're actually able to get something done. Like I said earlier, being behind the scenes and now being a candidate are two very different things. I've got a lot more respect for legislators than anyone who puts their name forward for public, you know, to work in public service. But you know, it's definitely, you know, something that once you've got an itch, you've got to keep scratching it as far as working in the legislature.
What would you see as your top priorities if you were elected?
I've been block walking for a few weeks now, and I've been talking to a lot of voters in the district, and the number one thing I'm hearing about is education, and that's followed pretty closely by neighborhood safety. Those two things are the big ones, but then following up on that is healthcare and good jobs, and those kind of go hand in hand. Obviously, losing Representative Hochberg is a big blow to public education in the state, and that would be an immediate priority for me. Working with neighborhood groups, working to improve neighborhood safety. I've got a lot of experience on healthcare issues working for Representative Coleman. I was fortunate enough to help staff him during his time with President Obama's White House Working Group of Legislators for Health Reform. We played a big role in helping pass the Affordable Care Act, which was a truly momentous occasion for this country. And, you know, good jobs. And as we've seen during this past legislative session, the members up in Austin, the supermajority of the Republicans, don't seem to have that priority when they're thinking about these budget cuts, when they're cutting 50,000 jobs, 100,000 government jobs. You know, we just saw most recently there's 11,000 education jobs that were cut. That's something that, particularly when we're trying to make our way out of an economic recession, that's just, you can't, that's unacceptable.
Now, obviously, public education is going to be a big issue after the $5.4 billion cut in 2011. What do you want to see done, and what do you think realistically can be done about this in 2013?
I think, first of all, in going back to my role as a legislative staffer, when constituents call up their legislator, I'm the one that answers the phone and talks to them. And I can tell you one of the most important ways to influence a legislator's vote is to make your voice heard. I think right now what you're seeing with the Save Texas Schools rally, what started back before, during the last legislative session, where parents and just concerned Texans are voicing their disapproval with what's going on with public education, particularly with funding, that more and more legislators are starting to feel that heat. Right now they're going back home to their districts and they're reading newspaper stories about overcrowded classrooms, about layoffs at their school districts, about non-renewals. And I think there's that message is finally starting to get through. Now, what they're going to do about it, realistically, I'm not sure. Ideally, you know, when I was a legislative staffer, they had a press conference during the special session where they passed the property tax reform package. And I remember
this was from 2006.
And I remember Representative Hochberg up there had these big blown up charts that were called the bucket charts. And it was a bunch of different buckets with spigots on top of them. And each one represented a different form of revenue that went into the collective pot for public education. And he showed using these charts that you can turn all these spigots on the way the legislature's saying, but you won't fill the bucket up to the level it needs to be filled. We dusted those charts off during this past session, brought them back out onto the House floor with the legislative study group, and showed legislators that problem that we pointed out in 2006 is still here in 2011, and it's still going to be here in 2013 and 2015 until we actually take a realistic look at this structural deficit and realize we need to do something to fix it. Ideally, what we need to do is find a stable source of revenue that doesn't collectively undercut education. And I'm not sure the way the Republicans are thinking about approaching it, but I think it's something that citizens of goodwill need to continue talking to their legislators and making sure they know this is a priority to us back home. So,
well, I mean, there has been some talk, not no action, but some talk about reforming the business margins tax. Do you think that is something that even can be done, or do you think that everything needs to be thrown out and start over?
You know, with the history of the legislature, it seems it's hard to get them to take action, particularly with taxes, unless there's a court order or gun pointed at their head. I think it's something that needs to be done. I think it's something that, like going back to, you know, the disapproval that's being voiced, that it will probably see something next session. Now, we need to make sure that it's something that's the best case for the state of Texas. Obviously, the tax did not perform the way it was supposed to. They said it was a tax swap. We pointed out that the LBB says it's not a tax swap, that it's going to have a continuing deficit. And unless they're willing to look at actual real numbers and govern responsibly, you know, we may be in this problem again. But I think the most important thing is to make sure that voices are heard in Austin that says we need to reform these things. You know, Representative Lon Burnham did a great job last session pointing out there's $32 billion in tax exemptions in our tax code. Now, some of those I can understand why they're there, but there are some that are very antiquated and we can't really provide a legitimate reason why we still have those on the books. And I think that's something we need to take an actual hard look at when we come back next session and decide, you know, is someone getting away with not paying their fair share? And because that means that the onus is putting on the back of other taxpayers, property taxpayers, to pay more because someone else is getting by with a shady deal. So,
let's talk a little bit about health care. As you know, there's the whole women's health program thing that's been going on. Attorney General Greg Abbott just filed another lawsuit to force the U.S. government to fund that without making Texas change its ways. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, from your perspective, you know, what is the effect of what has happened so far with the legislation that was passed in 2011 to cut funding, defund Planned Parenthood, and do you think that it is realistic for the state to pick up the funding slack from the federal government?
You know, I think what we're seeing a lot of is people refusing to govern smartly. They're not using their brains when they're making these decisions. I mean, just Attorney General Abbott, I think that's his 11th lawsuit against the feds. You know, the last session they passed this loser pays tort reform bill, but it doesn't happen to apply to him every time he files some new litigious suit against the federal government for campaign purposes. But, you know, to give you an example from this past session, something we tried to do, something that didn't happen, and it's frustrating why, is HIV and AIDS. Currently, if you have AIDS, you're qualified as disabled and you're eligible for Medicaid. Now, it costs a whole lot of money to provide the treatment necessary to that individual with AIDS. And they, granted, there's also income levels that they have to meet in order, they have to be classified as indigent. Now, if you're HIV positive, you're not classified as disabled, and you're not eligible for Medicaid. Right now, in this day and age, we can provide relatively low-cost drugs in comparison to AIDS treatments to those individuals with HIV that in the long term is more fiscally responsible because it cuts down the amount of money we spend when someone has AIDS. And we can ensure that person has a good quality of life and lives for a long time and is relatively healthy. It makes a lot of sense to extend Medicaid to that individual with HIV and save costs in the long run for healthcare and make sure that they have a good quality of life. We tried to do this. Representative Coleman filed an amendment to the budget to ask the state of Texas to apply for a waiver to cover those individuals. In 2014, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, those individuals are actually going to receive Medicaid. Thank you, President Obama. Unfortunately, Republicans in the legislature voted this down. Not quite sure why, because it makes fiscal sense and it makes moral sense. And that's kind of what we've seen as a problem in the legislature. You know, when they're going after the Women's Health Program, it's a program where $27 million comes from the federal government of its funding of $30 million. It's a 9-to-1 federal match. You know, the money is going to provide necessary health treatment for women, but because of ideological disputes, it gets cast aside. And that's the longer-term problem, you know. When Republicans in the legislature took Medicaid funding and shorted it by $5 billion, they're essentially using it as a credit card. And it's a deceptive trick to balance the budget, and it doesn't make fiscal sense. You know, there's ways to be smarter about healthcare spending. There's ways to focus on preventive care. There's ways to focus on children. There's ways to focus on changing the way we deliver payments that make fiscal sense, improve the healthcare of Texans, and lower costs overall. And we don't seem to be doing that. And I think it's time we finally get our eye on the ball and start governing with our brains instead of, you know, our ideological knee jerks.
What sort of legislation do you think you would want to see done specifically for your district? I mean, there's always bills that have, you know, very local impact. Mm-hmm. What sort of thing do you have in mind for District 137?
You know, one of the things that strikes me about my district is it's a district that has a lot of needs, and you know it needs its government to work on behalf of it. When we're dealing with an opposition that targets government as something that's bad, as something that's evil, as something that doesn't work, you know, that actually fails the people of this district. When you have individuals who are trying to enroll their children in CHIP or Medicaid or food stamps, and we're defunding Health and Human Services Commission and forcing them to lay off eligibility workers so there's a just giant stack of applications that they can't get in the system. You know, if that's a food stamp application, those are extra days that a child goes without a meal on their plate. I think we need to, on a larger scale, focus on ensuring that our government is actually working on behalf of its people, increasing efficiency. And there's ways to do that if you don't demagogue the issue and actually take a good look at the way our government runs and, you know, provide the resources necessary to get it working. More specifically and locally, you know, one of the things I've done with Representative Coleman, and he's been a big champion of this in his district, is specific legislation dealing with management districts and tax increment reinvestment zones. And those can be a tool for economic development that enhances quality of life, that enhances public safety. That have completely transformed. As an example, is the Midtown Management District, which if you look at Midtown 15 years ago and Midtown now, it's completely different. There's already been a lot of work that a lot of folks have already been doing, specifically in this district. Representative Hochberg did a lot of work right now. There's a super city, there's the management districts. That's something that I'd like to be engaged in and make sure to help push forward any changes necessary in the legislature to make sure those efforts continue on the right path and ultimately improve the quality of life and safety in the district. So,
how has the district changed in terms of just the map? You know, from the way it was in the last election to the way the court has drawn it. You know, how has it changed, and you know, what changes do you anticipate or would like to see? You know, after the D.C. court makes its ruling and further, you know, further alterations are done.
One of the things that, you know, overall, the deal that the court struck for these maps for across the state of Texas, I'm very disappointed in. I think there's a lot of, you know, when you look at the population growth over the last 10 years, obviously minorities accounted for most of it, particularly Hispanics. But in this specific district, I'm glad that they decided to keep it similar to represent Hochberg's district, and that the center of gravity, if you will, is anchored in Gulfton and Sharpstown. Those two communities of interest, you know, are going to continue growing and continue to providing the base of that district, and that's really where, you know, going forward, the areas that will solidify this district as a solid minority district and also as a solid Democratic district from the partisan side. Now, it changed a bunch during the various iterations of it. Obviously, it didn't even exist when the Republicans passed their map last session. So I'm grateful that they undid the pairing between Representative Hochberg and Representative Vo, especially because the legislature needs Representative Vo next session. He's been an effective public servant. But we've seen a bunch of different changes. You know, there's some A-leaf, there's less A-leaf. Some of the versions had to go down to Meyerland and Westbury. This cut most of that out. And like I said, it looks a lot more like Representative Hochberg's previous district with that focus on Sharpstown and Gulfton. Now, to go back to my previous point, this is a very high-needs district. There's a lot of... it's 57% Hispanic. Total population, but when you go down to the CVAP level, that number drops down into the 20s, the citizen voting age population. You know, we've got a lot of immigrants. It's a very, very diverse community. When I drive down the street, you can go eat at a Guatemalan restaurant or at a Peruvian restaurant, a Salvadoran restaurant. You know, even within the Hispanic community, there's a very diverse set of people. And that's fun. That's encouraging. It's great to see this diversity blooming in these folks, you know, with their businesses. And it's something that, you know, as we look outward, you know, this is the face of Houston, this district. It's diverse. It encompasses pretty much every ethnic group you can think of. And it's the way our city and our state and eventually our country are going to be trending forward. And it's great to be a part of that right now. So.
And you have three opponents for the Democratic nomination for 137. When people go to vote in May, you know, to nominate someone to replace Representative Hochberg, why should they vote to make you that nominee and not one of your opponents?
You know, like I said, I've worked in the legislature a long time now, and I've got the experience it'll take to be an effective representative from day one. You know, there won't be a learning curve. There won't be a time period where I'm going to be learning how to file a bill or how to draft an amendment. The second I hit the ground running, I'll have a legislative package. I'll be working with other members and working in committees to make sure that the great work that Representative Hochberg did for the last 20 years, that there's not a lapse or an on-the-job training period, that it'll continue forward. I think that's the most important thing. But ultimately, you know, growing up from my background, I was the first in my family to graduate from college. My grandmother came here from Mexico with 1 year of formal education. And so just in that generation skip, to be the first person in my family to graduate from college, to have a background where I've worked a number of different jobs, particularly in construction, and knowing that my values are the same as my community's values, and that if they send me to Austin, that I will be working as hard as I can every single day to ensure that the services they need and their communities are spoken for and delivered.
All right. Joseph Carlos Madden, thank you very much for talking to me today.